Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hour number three, Darren, Donick, and Chase. We are here on this Wednesday afternoon. Tim Hasselbeck, hopefully he's ready, from ESPN. He now joins us, his weekly time with us. Tim, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you guys?
How are you handling social distancing with the family at home? You guys been watching movies?
You know, so believe it or not, I'm kind of an introvert. I'm an introvert. So like, I'm probably in a bad way, kind of content with like my small circle of my family staying on my home property. I think it maybe affects introverts a little bit less than extroverts, because it definitely, like, we'll see people walking down the streets, you know, people, and they're like, hi, oh my, hey, you know, I see you. But I will say I had a birthday 2 days ago. And so, I think one of the good things, and I think I've told you this before, I share a birthday with my daughter. And so one of the, I think, the good things that has come out of this time is the birthday parades, like the drive-by birthday parades. And mm-hmm. It was good to see some faces on my on the birthday parade that was really for my daughter, but some people that I enjoyed seeing did drive by as well.
Oh, so you guys got that 2 days ago?
Yeah, got it 2 days ago.
Well, that's cool. I've seen those on social media, and I've also seen, like, schools, you know, teachers doing that, driving through neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
You know what was neat? So my daughter turned 15. And so, you know, some of the girls like from her lacrosse team came by, her friends from school, they drove by. And then so for me, you know, as a parent, you guys know this, a lot of the people that you see and socialize are people that, you know, your kids play sports with or go to school with. And so those are a lot of your friends. And so, you know, was a nice little birthday treat for me as well. So our friend Hal Gill, he was part of the parade. Steve Hutchinson was part of the parade. It was good.
Oh,
nice
boy.
Little parade.
Have you ever seen those two together?
Oh, it's something.
They were not together. They were now. I will say, like Steve was like the grand marshal of the parade. He was the pace car. He said he was in a golf cart.
He's a Hall of Famer.
That he had decked out.
Yeah. That's what happens when you get the gold jacket.
I think that's why he was up front, yes.
Yeah, that's what happens when you have a bust. When you get a bust and a gold jacket, that's what happens. Bill Cowher today said that he feels like Jameis Winston would be a good fit in Pittsburgh. Do you agree?
I think if you – I think we're all probably operating with him as like in a backup role. Right. I mean, that's what everybody seems to be talking about Jameis as now, because, you know, weren't health issues with him. Everyone saw his production from a year ago. It was available for everyone to sign again in that first wave of free agency. And, you know, there weren't any takers. So, you know, you're talking about him in a backup role. You guys have heard me talk about where I think Ben Roethlisberger is. You know, I think the likelihood of him being back to the Ben that we're used to seeing is really unlikely, and the way their backups played a year ago would lead you to think that, like, hey, they probably need to improve that position on their football team. So, yeah, I've been on record as saying I think the Green Bay Packers are a good fit for Jameis, but I could see Pittsburgh being a good fit as well.
What's the discussions like on your end? Because you've been a part of the draft, and this is going to be a draft that we've never seen before. Well, I guess it's going to probably feel a lot more like, I guess, maybe back in the 70s where they just would call guys and say, hey, you got drafted in the second round or something like that. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't even televised or there was nothing back then. But are the discussions?
It's funny you say that about 70s. I was just talking to my dad, and I said, you know, it's interesting. There's some people that don't want this to go on. And he's like, look, the draft can go on. It doesn't need to be on TV. He goes, my dad was drafted in, I guess, what is 77, and he's like, it wasn't on TV. You just got a phone call, and that was exactly my dad's situation. Like, hey, second round, New England Patriots, I think I told you guys the story before.
You have, yeah.
Where he's a kid from Cincinnati, plays football at Colorado. He gets drafted by the New England Patriots, and he's scrambling around looking for a map to find the state of New England. he wants to know where he's living.
So what have the discussions been like on your end of how you guys are going to handle this in less than 3 weeks?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's probably still a little bit of uncertainty. Is Trey Wingo in the studio? And, is Susie Colbert, is she in a different studio, and is she conducting interviews with people, at their various locations? And, I do know that ESPN has, set up a number of people to be able to work remotely in the technology. It seems that, at least, from what I've seen, like, I think everyone's expectations have changed a little bit, and they're maybe a little okay with a bit of a delay, or maybe hearing a lawnmower in the background or a dog barking, and kind of understand that that's the situation that we're living in. And so I think that ESPN is just trying to figure out, okay, well, how can we, how is this going to operate with, let's say Trey is in a situation where he can't be in the studio, and maybe there's a producer in the control room, and a lot of moving parts. I know that I feel like ESPN's done a very good job putting on shows and pushing out content, and I think that the fans probably have also understood that it's going to feel differently, and how and what gets seen by the fans, in some ways will be maybe even a little bit more access than they've had in the past, and in other ways, not as much access.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck about the upcoming NFL draft, and Tim, I've been thinking about it. I think the league did the right thing of saying everybody's got to be like everybody else. We're staying at home. Mm-hmm. We're working from home. You can't be all collected together in a war room, that sort of thing. But are they adjusting the time between picks? Are they considering that? What kind of guidelines have they sort of told the league that, okay, because the communication is going to be different, we're going to give you X amount of time, or here's what we recommend to try to keep the draft moving?
Yeah, I mean, I think the feeling is, and I haven't seen anything, and there could have easily been, something that was pushed out that I hadn't seen. I know that Adam Schefter's been sending out a fair amount of information about it, but I would think that there's going to be an understanding as well in terms of the communication, the lag in communication, if there's a trade, how that trade gets communicated and sent to the league, and will they have to slow things down for that to happen? Will have to slow it down to say, hey, a trade has just, happened. And so, they're going to be given a little bit more time. And so, hey, you, the pick right behind them, we got to alert you that this is going to be the case. I think the other aspect of it that they're probably working on, and it sounds like the league is going to do some mock drafts so that, they can kind of figure out how this is going to work. But it also sounds like, if you think about this, I know that it's come up with schools about having classes and, some of these kind of group environments where everyone's communicating with each other, they're not as secure from somebody else kind of jumping in on it. And, that's going to be something that I'm sure that they're working on right now to keep that kind of safe and private inside the league. So, look, I really, like you, think they're doing the right thing by moving on with this. I think that people will enjoy watching it. I think it'll be a good reprieve, and hopefully it seems like we've gotten some good news the last few days. Hopefully some of that will carry on, and roughly 2 weeks from now we'll be dealing with be seeing maybe more good news, because if your team drafted a quarterback you wanted them to, or anything like that. So yeah, I think there are a lot of issues. I doubt that it'll happen without a hiccup. I saw Kevin Colbert, the general manager for the Steelers, talk about, because of free agent signings after the draft, that adding three more rounds makes sense. And I thought that was a great idea. So hopefully the league is open to some of these things to make it a good experience for as many people as possible.
Wow, more rounds I had not thought of. But
Well, you think about this. There's so many undrafted free agents, right? Like every team's going to sign like 15 college free agents. And, well, so like, you know, how does that mad rush happen? And so, well, what if you just kind of had more rounds? I mean, the draft used to be, you know, kind of what Darren was saying in the 70s, it wasn't on TV. There also were way more rounds.
Yeah.
And so,
you know, what's interesting,
Tim? Undrafted guy.
Jeff Fisher came on with us. You know what's interesting about that? Jeff Fisher came on the show on Monday. And we had a great conversation with him, and he talked about how crazy the draft is, and then he said how crazy the mad scramble is after the draft for exactly what you're talking about. Those undrafted free agents, he said it's chaos. It's crazy.
Crazy. In a couple of ways. So how about if you draft those guys, you know, rather than signing them as free agents, like, listen, go 15 rounds, you know, have it be kind of, you know, rapid fire, you know, have it like, I mean, you know, maybe you do something like that. That would be something I would think you'd have to work out with the PA because, you know, then, you know, if you're a 12th round pick, you have a little bit less, you know, you have less say, right? You're going to the team that drafted you. But like me personally, I would be for that. I think that you know, kind of being chosen by a team, you know, having been a guy that was not, I think it means something. So, look, like a lot of things, just like birthday parties are different this time of year, you know, just the – you know, getting drafted in 2020 is going to be different than any other year. And I think that, you know, as long as everybody's okay with changing some expectations about it and just enjoying the fact that we get to do it, then, you know, I think that's a good thing. It can be a good thing.
We're talking to Tim Hasselbeck of ESPN, NFL analyst for them. So Tom Brady did an interview with Howard Stern earlier today, a very long interview. And one of the things that kind of came out of that was that he never really cared about the legacy when it came to the decision of leaving New England. Do you buy that? Do you buy that that's actually his thought?
I generally think that guys are more concerned about kind of their personal situation than how it is relating to like a team or organization. Like I know that when my brother was with the Seattle Seahawks, and even though he started in Green Bay, like, look, he was a starter there for 12 years, took him to a Super Bowl. Like, I think, you know, in many ways he thought that he would never move from Seattle. You know, at the same time, what happens is that, like, as people kind of come and go in the organization and things change and, you know, the organization's feelings about, you know, the player change no matter what they've accomplished, you know, you can – just naturally become a little more selfish about it, you know? And so I just think that, I think that that happens. And so I think that, you know, Tom Brady's loyalty to the team and, you know, kind of affinity to the team and all of that, like that's all true. And there's elements of that, but like, you know, he's still more concerned about himself than he is the Patriots organization. So I think for Brady, especially seeing Joe Montana play somewhere else and Brett Favre play somewhere else and Peyton Manning play somewhere else, like I think if you're smart about it, if you're realistic about it, you realize that it happens to most guys.
Do you think in your gut feeling that when his career is over, whether that's next year or 2 years from now, we're obviously always going to look at him as a New England Patriot and remember those times, but will his time with the Bucs actually have some meaning to it, or do you think it'll just be a blip on the radar of, oh, yeah, he did finish his career with the Bucs?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think because his career has been so long and so good in New England, I think it'll be a blip if we give it some time and look back. And that doesn't mean that he's not going to make – you know, Tampa Bay, you know, more competitive. I think he will. I think it's a really hard division, but I think he'll make them more competitive. Look, just like Favre made the Jets more competitive and Favre made the Vikings and Montana made the Chiefs more competitive and Peyton Manning, you know, he won a Super Bowl with Denver. So like, I think he's going to have an impact. But like, even though Peyton Manning won a Super Bowl in Denver, like, you know, if you were to be like, okay, close your eyes and picture Peyton Manning playing in the NFL, like, you know, he's in a blue and white uniform, you know, and, you know, I feel the same way, you know, I feel about Favre in Green Bay or Montana in San Francisco. So I think it'll be a blip. I think like, oh, yeah, and he finished there. I think I'll still feel that way.
You and the family remain safe, Mr. Introvert, and we enjoyed our conversation.
Yes, so tell me this. You guys, tell me your setup just so I'm, because you guys are all in your homes, basically.
Mm-hmm. This is going to be, today is, let's see, what do we have here? This is going to be show, this is show 15, is that right, guys?
Yeah, this is our third week. We
show
started
15.
On a Wednesday, is that right? We started
on a Thursday.
It was our first day
on
in the middle
Thursday.
Of the week.
Yeah,
Thursday. Okay.
It was the
so
day.
3 weeks.
So who's the most distracted at home? Like, who's the guy who's like you're better in the studio? Who's that guy?
Ooh, I don't.
That's a good question.
Yeah, that is a good question. What would the answer
we've
be?
We've done
to that?
Okay. We've done okay, I think, not having too many distractions, wouldn't you say? I mean,
yeah,
other than
so.
An odd blip here and there with the equipment for one of us, I think we've been. We've been all right.
I'm in a room with the door shut, so I keep the dogs, the family, everybody's out. I got the door shut. So
my cat's caused some problems.
I think that's
about it.
Stanley's been an issue for Willie.
Has it? Yeah. Well, I think I've told you this before. Schefter, you know, does hits from his house, and he at one point had like 7 dogs. I think he might be down to like 5 now. But Schefter literally has done hits with dogs, like, sitting at his feet. Like, and no, they just know, I mean, I don't know how he has them trained that well. We have one dog, and
wow,
he's broken our screen door about 7,000 times, so.
My biggest problem, Tim, is we've been having these Zoom calls a lot, and, like, yesterday, we had one after the show, and I couldn't get my freaking mute button off. I said they couldn't hear me. So it was a cluster at
you know
the beginning.
You know what? I talked Chase on that. They did that on purpose. They were sick of listening to you.
We hacked it.
Well, I would not be surprised if that were true.
It was the Patriots. They were practicing what they were going to do with the draft, and so they hacked into your Zoom and were able
yes,
to do that.
Exactly right.
Well, it, you guys
Yeah. Did
you finish your story?
You guys,
I'm sorry. Did you finish your story with Schefter?
I did. I was going to say, the other good thing that happens is you guys talk about like paraphernalia that you find that you go through and stuff. So finding some real gems going through here. I might have to send some pictures along.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. That's what we want to
see. Oh, we're up for that.
Some real gems. My brother's Instagram has a fair amount of stuff as well.
Okay.
Like Roger Clemens signed pump cleats. Remember those?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. That's outstanding. Where did he find those? That had to have been in the attic.
So my father used to work at Reebok. And so was kind of like a sports marketing for Reebok. And so like everything from like the Dan and Dave, you know, Olympics
yes.
stuff to Christian Okoye or Roger Clemens or Boomer Esiason, you know, and pump stuff, like, we got you covered.
Oh,
the pump,
man.
That's a throwback right there. The concept of mm-hmm. pumping the air into your shoes to make them feel tighter and
yes.
closely fit. I mean, where did that go? What happened to that technology? Was that for real or was that just marketing?
Dunk contest.
I was going to say, D. Brown is who I always think of when I think of the pump-up shoe.
Yeah.
In the dunk contest. That's exactly right.
Yeah, exactly right.
Good stuff, Tim. Thank you, as always.
Right.
And we'll talk soon.
Cool. See you, fellas. Bye.
All right. Tim Hasselbeck, our weekly chat with him from ESPN. Always good to talk to him. All right. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. Hey, even though there's not playoff hockey, and I know it's sad because we will be talking about round one getting cranked up tonight. You can still support the Nashville Predators Foundation and give back to our community. Head to thenashvillepredators.com/Nashville Strong today to help our neighbors still in need following last month's tornado. All donations support the Community Foundation of Middle Tennessee's Emergency Response Fund. So once again, go to NashvillePredators.com/NashvilleStrong, and you can still help out, because remember, just because there's been a lot going on, especially in this market, those people who are affected by the tornado, they're still dealing with it, okay? They're still trying to repair their lives, even though then we've had this added to their plate. So keep them in mind for sure. Now, we talked about Dana White being on Get Up this morning and his conversation with Mike Greenberg. We have pulled a little bit of that interview. It's kind of the theme of today's show. And so with that being said, let's hear 5-6 minutes of Dana White today on Get Up.
Yeah, the support has been great too from the fans and from the fighters. The fighters want to compete. Nobody's competing in this event that doesn't want to compete. And I've been set on this date. I postponed 3 of my shows, and I said that I was going to go April 18th.
Why is it so important to you, though? What specifically about this time and these events do you think is so important?
Well, I think now is a time, you know, where we need to find solutions. We need to find out how we can get back to normal and keep it safe. And with the UFC, safety is always an issue for us. It's been an issue for 20 years. And I promise you, on April 18th, we will go overboard as far as safety is concerned. We'll make sure that everybody who's involved in this event, from traveling there to participating or working the event, everybody will be safe. And we just did this in Brazil a few weeks ago. We had an event there with no fans, and it went off great. And everybody who left that event is healthy.
How would you describe the biggest challenges? What have been the biggest challenges for you and for UFC in putting this together under these extraordinary circumstances?
The biggest challenge is that the world changes every day. I mean, every day when we wake up, there's a whole new set of things that we need to face that have changed overnight. And now, as we get closer to this event, you have forces working against you to make the event not happen. So that's been happening to us the entire time, too. This is the hardest thing I've ever done, without a doubt. The hardest thing that I've ever done. But it's going to happen April 18th.
What pieces of it have been the most? I'm just looking for something specific. Like, what? I get that the world changes. We've all experienced that in our own different ways. What specific things have happened that have been hurdles you've had to jump over?
Well, obviously, as this thing continued to progress and get worse and worse, I mean, I never thought I'd see the day that Las Vegas shut down and the Strip was closed. I never thought I'd see that day in my lifetime. And obviously that happened. Then as, state by state started to close down, those type of things we faced, and a lot of politics that I'm not going to get into.
Let's get a little into it if we can.
It's not worth it. Listen, I've jumped through a lot of hoops, and I've battled with a lot of different forces leading up to this fight, and it's just not worth talking about. It's happening. We have a fight scheduled April 18th. The fighters are fighting. I have the whole thing figured out. Not only have I figured that out, I figured out how to put on my international fights too. So every time that there's been an obstacle, we figured out how to get around it. While still, following the rules.
So one of the obstacles, of course, has been figuring out where to hold the fight. Where are you holding UFC 249?
So we're going to be live from ESPN. That's where. It doesn't matter where it is, because the only thing that, first of all, no fans can come. You can't come to the fight. You can't buy a ticket. The only place to watch this in the United States is on ESPN, and that's the only thing that matters. I know that several news sources are putting out, places where they think it is. ESPN is where it is. That's all you need to know.
Understood. What you're referring to is the New York Times is reporting that UFC 249 will be held on tribal land in California. Can you react to that?
ESPN.
So no confirmation whatsoever where it will be. Now, we've also heard about your island. You have procured, but we're told, an island where you will be able to hold future events. What can you tell us about this island?
Yeah, so we're still working on getting that deal done, which we'll have done this week. So if I keep putting on fights only in the United States with United States talent, I'll run through all my talent very quickly. You know, this is a global sport. We do lots of fights internationally, and we had a lot of fights scheduled internationally. Those will continue. I have an island that we can fly everybody right into, and hopefully by like mid-May. Because the way that this thing looks, it doesn't look like this thing's ending anytime soon. When you listen to what a lot of these politicians are saying, I mean, they're talking about the NFL not going in September. If the NFL can't go in September, what does that mean for school? What does that mean for work? It's just, I don't know. This thing is very confusing.
I get it. And obviously, there are so many uncertainties surrounding all of this. I do want to go quickly back to just one other thing that we talked about earlier. I read a fascinating interview with you this week in which you talked about how criticism is something that really does not bother you. There will be those who will be concerned, not just about the safety of your fighters, but that anyone's health or safety is being compromised by you putting these together, that any resources are being pulled away and all of that. What do you say to those people who are raising those concerns?
Right. Yeah, and I understand that. So people that are working this event are people that want to work this event. We're going to take every precaution to make sure that everybody is safe. You know, the last thing I want to do is hurt any of my employees, my fighters, or myself. I'm going to be at this event, too. So every precaution is being taken. You know, we have access to things that a lot of these other businesses don't have access to, you know, medically. And I'm going to make sure that everything is in place to be safe. If you look at Vince McMahon from the WWE, that guy hasn't skipped a beat. He's been putting on events, and I haven't heard anything negative about his events or anything bad that has happened.
What do you think it means for sports fans in this country going through what we're going through right now to have the opportunity to see sports, live sports of any kind, including what you're putting on now during this pandemic?
Yeah, I think it's very important. I think it's really important. You know, if you're going to ask people to stay in their home for possibly months, people have to be entertained or people are going to start losing their minds. We have to figure out a way. We need to figure out solutions, not just, no, this can't happen. This is absolutely impossible. We have to figure out solutions. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to figure out a way to do this safely, and you know, it's going to be more expensive, it's aggravating, but people want this, people want to see it, and I'm going to deliver it next Saturday.
There you go, Dana White this morning on Get Up, his interview with Mike Greenberg. I have been interviewing Dana White for 15 years. He's owned the UFC for almost 20 years. They took it over in 2001. They bought it for $2 million, and it's worth billions today. None of that surprises me. Like I said, I've been dealing with Dana White for a long time. For people maybe that have been in this market not very long, I did an MMA show in this market for at least a decade. I don't know the exact time frame. It was at least a decade, and used to deal with Dana White all the time, and that's how he operates. That's how he built it into the empire that it is today. I do laugh. I do chuckle. Because by the way, I would say Mike Greenberg did a really good job in the interview there. I don't know why it's such a secret. I'm still trying to figure out why it's such a secret for him to tell everybody where they're going to hold this on Saturday. Because like you said, nobody can get in. I'm not sure why he doesn't want that out there, but nonetheless, that's Dana White. Usually when you tell him no, he's going to figure out a way to make it happen. He doesn't accept no as an answer for the most part. Usually, sometimes he's had to bow down to no, but for the most part, he doesn't accept no, and he's going to figure out a way to still do what he thinks is right in his mind. So what did you guys think of the interview?
Well, let me start it by asking this question. It sounded to me like he's afraid if they know where the fight is. If anybody knows where the fight is, then somebody in that area is going to shut it down, or somebody nationally is going to shut it down. True?
I don't know.
That's a good point.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Like, why wouldn't he? Why wouldn't he say
I don't know
where it is if there's no problem and he's okay? I mean, this just illustrates to me. I mean, it is very clear that he's pushing the envelope to do this. It just seems very early to try to put this on. His point at the end, I completely agree with. After a certain amount of this, we're all going to be losing our minds in our homes. And so trying to find ways to do these things as quickly as possible is the way to go. But I can't help but thinking we're not ready yet to do what he's trying to do. And he's saying his fighters are good with it and stuff, but I just think this is there's a higher risk than there needs to be with this event.
Why aren't we ready? I mean, wrestling is doing the same thing. I haven't heard you say that wrestling shouldn't be doing this and we're not ready for that.
I agree. I think that they did jump the gun.
Okay. I just haven't heard you say that.
Yeah, well, no, I think it's too early. I you know, the CDC put the 8-week guideline in there, right? We're not through the 8 weeks. So I think that would be the next step is what is the CDC? But, you know, they're pushing the envelope, and it's giving us entertainment, I guess, but I just think the risk is too high.
And you may be right, Willie, but the thing with the WWE, and, you know, I said that I was uncomfortable. I mean, I watched it, but I was, you know, I said last week when you guys asked me about it with WrestleMania, I'm like, you know, I probably, if it was my decision to make, I would have postponed it. I wouldn't have done it last week, but they did, and they pulled it off, and, you know, I watched it. I was entertained, but I think your concerns are valid. The only difference there is that's the building they had it in is a WWE facility that they have control of 24/7, 365. And so while you're not eliminating all risks, I mean, I think that helps that they were able to control the situation as much as possible. Whereas whatever facility UFC is going to be in, I don't know if that's the case. If Dana White has some underground secret facility somewhere, which, Darren, you know him, I don't think that would surprise anybody.
No.
If he pulls that out. But
nothing surprises me with Dana.
Yeah, so I understand the concerns and how he handled that interview. I mean, kudos to Mike Greenberg of how he handled it, but that was Dana being Dana. And I know he has a plan, and he's probably going to pull this off. And on Monday, we're going to come on here and go, huh, okay. Well, could that work, you know, for this, this, and this? So,
I'm intrigued. I'm going to watch. I'm just telling you right now.
You're ordering
I'm going to watch.
Pay-per-view.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't – let's see. I don't have ESPN Plus.
It doesn't matter. Even if you do, you still have to
pay
$65.
Okay, you still have to get the – okay. So the prelims are going to be on ESPN, correct?
Yeah. So you can watch some of that.
I'm
going
to check out the prelims, and if I continue to be intrigued by it, yeah, I will.
Okay.
I'll just wait. Yeah, but I'm going to definitely check out the prelims. I want to see what they're doing because I think this will get a discussion piece. Let me just put this, set the record straight on this that you heard in that interview. When he says that Dana White does not care about criticism, he's wrong. Dana White does. Dana White absolutely pays attention to criticism. He does not like criticism at all. But I will say, does it bother him? Yes, it does. Is it change him? No, it does not. It fuels his fire. It's what drives him. Criticism is what drives Dana White.
You know, I think you're right, Darren. I think you know Dana White better than I do, for sure. It intrigues me, because I thought it was a good, fair interview by Mike Greenberg asking the questions. He asked some good, tough questions that needed to be asked. But at the same time, ESPN is showing this. So somebody at ESPN had to sign off and say, okay, if you're going to have it, we're going to show it. So they probably had an opportunity somewhere along the line to say, you know, we don't think this is a good idea. But ESPN is somewhere in here giving it the green light. True?
I would think so.
Yeah. Well, they have a contract with the UFC, so yeah.
I wonder what kind of discussions those were like behind the scenes, where maybe Dana White said, hey, I got a contract that says if I have an event, you're showing it, so yeah. I don't care what you think. I don't know
if
that
happened or not. Oh, that's how he operates. No, that's how he operates. Now, it doesn't always work, but that's how he operates. He is a bull in a china shop, for sure. And like I said, it doesn't always work in his favor, but he's going to push and push until he can't push anymore.
The one thing I wish I'd heard, and maybe Marquise, I don't know if we played the whole interview, but did they ever ask? Did Greenberg ask? Have the athletes been tested? I mean, I heard him say that the athletes are okay. They've somewhere here agreed. Hey, whatever the case is, I know there's some risk involved. I'm in. I'm going to fight. But I wonder if they have done any testing. Like, they didn't go down that road.
I mean, that was 7 minutes. You think about this. I mean, you know ESPN would never do at least a 7-minute interview, right? That's a long – by the way, I don't know how long the Ed linked it was, but that's a long interview for television, right?
Yeah.
Do you know Marquise?
I'd be curious, maybe Marquise can weigh on this, too. What was the discussion after Dana White was finished with the interview when Greenberg got his panel back together? What was the tone of the analysis?
I didn't go deep into the discussion, but I will say the only thing I'd cut out from that interview is when he talked about, like, how weird is it to have fans in it, not in attendance, and he basically compared it to their reality show, The Ultimate Fighter, where they don't have any fans at all, and it's just the fighters. Mm-hmm. So that's, like, the only thing I cut out from that thing.
And they've been doing that for – Ultimate Fighter's been going on for – what, 15 years at least?
Yes, at least. Still going on.
Yeah, it's really – the Ultimate Fighter is what started the rocket ship going up. I mean, that's when it left the launch pad, is the Ultimate Fighter is really what started this whole thing. It grew the sport exponentially. And, yeah, that's what they do. They fight in front of no one. So he's been holding fights aired on television in front of no crowds – for a long time. So it was about an 8-minute interview, I guess, in total.
Yeah, in total it was about 8 minutes.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's a good question, Willie. I don't know if what the answer is on, you know, how they go about that, if they're getting tested. I mean, he just said they've already held an event in Brazil. And so I don't know how that worked. Did they get tested beforehand? I don't know. He said they're taking all the, you know, all the safety precautions to keep everybody safe.
I'd be curious to know what are the precautions, because there's only so many you can take, you know, before you send two guys out there to fight. There's no question his attitude is very different than all of the other major sports. I mean, from golf to tennis to soccer to basketball. But I mean, you go down the line. I mean, he's been cavalier. For sure, and we'll see how it turns out.
If I were to guess what the method of his testing is, it's probably on the same lines as what WWE's was. Like, if you have a temperature over a certain amount, then you can't fight or you can't, like, enter the building. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be their entire method.
Yeah. That's probably – I'd say there's –
right, and that I, and as we
I'd
know, that only tells
true.
You so much, right? That eliminates some of the risk, but as we know, this virus can be carried – by people that are asymptomatic.
Sure.
Yeah, Willie, everything you're saying is you're spitting out the truth. There's planes that fly over our house every day. So, you know what, there's people at risk constantly. I mean, they're getting on a can with wings every single day. Okay, why are airplanes in the air? I mean, at risk, everything is at risk. Right? I mean, that I see what you're saying about the athletes. There's no question. Playing sports, banging, beating and banging bodies and sweat and spit and everything else, yes, are they at risk? But it's either that or, once again, just shut the country down for the next 9 to 12 months, and then we'll see how long it takes us to sift out of this mess.
And I think
at the bottom of the ocean. I am 100% with you. I'm with you. We're going to get to that point where it's time to go to another level where we feel like, okay, this group of professional athletes, especially, the risk is lower for this virus to affect them in an adverse way. And how do we protect the most vulnerable? I just don't think we're there yet, right? I hope we get there in a month. I hope we get there in no longer than 2 months or 3 months. But April 18th, I just think it's a little early. We don't have all the data in yet that we need.
And it might be, Willie, but I also think it takes somebody like Dana White or Vince McMahon that they're going to push the envelope, and they could be pushing too soon, but that's what it's going to take. It's going to take that kind of aggression to kind of get this ball rolling again. And if, you know, if he's got a plan in place and can test it out and it works, then I think come Monday, you're going to see other leagues start to look at some of these models and go, all right, how can we make this work? Now, it's a lot different for WWE or UFC, because you're having one-on-one fights or tag matches. If you're WWE, it's different than fielding teams against each other. But I think it takes those types of personalities to kind of get this going to try and get things back.
Well, wrestling and UFC are kind of the same boat, right? It's kind of the
sure.
same deal.
Yeah.
Really, you know, you're kind of in a ring, you're in an octagon, whatever, and, you know, I'd say they're pretty similar sports, true?
Absolutely.
And how they operate as,
yeah.
you know, the athletes.
It's the same concept. And,
yeah.
And those are the ones, I would say if you took UFC, WWE, I'd throw golf, and I would even throw NASCAR in this. Those are probably the four sports that could come back on a, I'm not going to say easy, but maybe an easier path than the other sports just because of how they operate.
I think NASCAR, honestly, should be the most aggressive.
And I think they will just, be.
You know, they to me, their
With
sport
no
is set up. Oh, yeah, no crowds, of course. But, I mean, these big tracks, they're set up for everybody to keep safe distances. They can wear masks. I mean, the athletes or the drivers are separated. They're in a car by themselves. I mean, to me, that sport should be really aggressive.
Yeah, and if people are watching them race against each other on a video game, they will watch a race where there are no fans. And I think if you're Fox, you're pushing them to do this, and you're saying, hey, run them at night.
Yeah, hold that thought, Chase. We need to talk about this on the other side. That's
okay.
That is going to be a good way to end the third hour.
I have one more question about the UFC to ask you guys, too.
All right, sounds good. I want to talk to you about USS. United Structural Systems, a foundation repair and waterproofing company that has served our area here in Middle Tennessee since 1994. They've been at it for a long time, and they've got a whole lot of satisfied homeowners. How about more than 18,000 satisfied residential customers? And right now, we're supposed to get some rain this week. Got a little bit this week already, but we're expecting more, especially tonight, overnight. Maybe some heavy showers, maybe some thunderstorms, maybe some bad weather coming through in the middle of the night. Maybe you've noticed you've got some bowing basement walls, or you've got standing water in a crawl space, or musty odors or rot that's in floor joists, or condensation on ductwork, or you've got cracks in basement floors. Look, all these are signs that something is going on with your house. That maybe your house is trying to tell you something, and they are the experts at USS, and they believe in their quality of work and their reputation and the integrity. And projects like this, most of you definitely put me in the category. You're not tackling a project like this at your house. You may do other home projects, but something like this, you need the experts out there. And they're locally owned, and they're licensed and insured. And they'll come out, and they'll assess the problem, and they'll tell you what's going on. They'll give you a free estimate. That's what they'll do at USS. And you, if you need to get USS out at your house, the number is 615-227-2275. That's 227-2275. You can always go to their website, usstn.com. And as they say, we guarantee our best. Call USS. Chris Mason and David Price in the fourth and final hour of today's show. So before we get back into the NASCAR side of things, you wanted to ask one more on our interview that we played Dana White on Get Up this morning, one more about the UFC. What was it?
Yeah, I had one question because I think this also plays into the whole the fighters are on board. They're all in. Everybody that's fighting wanted to fight. I've seen, and maybe I'm confusing the wrestling world with the UFC world, but I feel like I've seen some pieces, and I think it was on the wrestling, on Brian Gumbel's program on HBO, The Real Sports Show, about how sometimes the fighters feel exploited because they don't really have a union, so to speak. Does the UFC have a players' union, per se? Did they have a say collectively?
Union? No. Mm-mm.
They nope. do not. Okay, nope. So the decision is probably being made for them by Dana White. I do wonder deep down if the fighters felt like they wanted to question whether this was right or not, did they feel like they had the ability to do that?
Guess what? Drivers in NASCAR don't have a union either.
Yeah, they tried.
It's been a long discussed conversation. Those NASCAR drivers don't have a union. Wrestling doesn't have a union. UFC fighters don't have a union. Last time I checked, is PGA? Do golfers have a union?
I don't think so.
I don't either.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
NASCAR,
a good question. I don't know.
NASCAR tried it in like the 80s or 90s. They tried to form one, and it blew up in their face.
Yeah.
It didn't work.
It's a factor in this, wouldn't you think? It made it easier for Dana White to push this forward.
But, I mean, you had wrestlers for WWE. I mean, Roman Reigns was supposed to, in my opinion, win the title and was going to face Bill Goldberg, and he pulled out because, you know, he had concerns over...
And Vince McMahon said it was okay.
Yeah, and Vince was like, absolutely. I mean, there were others that pulled out, too. Maurkice didn't. The Miz got sick.
Well, The Miz was a different story. He had to because he was sick, and he was around people. And so, obviously, if you show symptoms that you're sick, they're going to tell you to kind of go away. But a lot of people who, especially, they had a rule to where if you were sick and you showed symptoms, or if you traveled the country in the last few months or so, or the last few weeks, that you couldn't perform. So that was their whole thing.
Right. So, I mean, they didn't need a union. I mean, it was just kind of case by case. And Vince, you know, heard him out and was like, he wasn't forcing anybody to do anything.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, those are just the cold, hard facts about some of these sports. They don't have unions.
Yeah.
The athletes.
So what was your NASCAR question?
Well, I just... Knowing what we've known about NASCAR and the steady decline, I mean, they've lost, it's not an opinion, it's a fact. I mean, they've lost basically half their audience over the years. I mean,
correct.
The erosion of the sport has not been good. Once again, I get it. Safety first, doing all the right things, all that goes without saying. Listen to the CDC, all that goes without saying. But if you're in private rooms having private discussions and you're NASCAR, and because of the unique dynamic they are in, where, of course, you're not going to open up the stands to the fans, they're not going to be a part of it, but you do have big TV contracts, mm-hmm. and you've got isolation, and you've got big tracks with space, and knowing the erosion that you've had in the current landscape, where, as we've just talked about, unless you like wrestling or unless you like mixed martial arts and the UFC, you've got no live sports, period, except for guys on iRacing, racing on video games, nothing live. If there was ever a time to try to get some new eyeballs on your product, wouldn't this be the time? I'm not saying today. I'm saying here in the very near future when we feel like it is time to get back to some of this and figure out some new ways to do it. Wouldn't NASCAR be the one to be out there? I keep asking the question, who's going to be the first? Well, shouldn't the answer be NASCAR?
Yeah. I mean, what were they doing when this all really started? I mean, they had gone to the track. They were at Atlanta. They were not opening it to the fans. They were going to race. And they finally got to the point where I think they were getting pressure from the outside because everybody was canceling. The Rudy Gobert thing had just happened. They had no choice, and so they joined everyone else. But, you know, early on, I mean, they were going to keep after it. And they then updated the schedule, and they came out with the, all right, May, we're going to probably look at May 8th returning to the track, or May 9th, which would be at Martinsville Speedway. I still think that there is a chance that happens. Now, it might be later in May. They might open with the Coke 600 or reschedule some of these races and shift the schedule around. But I do think there is a chance that they do it. And you know, Fox, they've released ratings for these online races. They're not great, 0.71 from Bristol. I mean, but people are watching. So you're getting about 1 million viewers or something like that. People are paying attention. If you're Fox, you come back and you go, all right, if the track has lights, let's do a Saturday night race. We'll put it in prime time or Friday night or whatever, and you guys go and run these races without fans. I definitely think they will, and I agree with you. So I think that that's something that NASCAR is talking about internally.
If I'm NASCAR, I'm really aggressive with this. I'm in a room and – we're in a room or we're on Zoom, you know, WebEx, Skype, whatever you're using these days for these meetings. And I'm talking to people constantly, and we're going to figure this out. To me, NASCAR, if I were them, this is just me saying if I were them, I'd figure out a way to get your sport back on television in a safe way, in a proper way, not in front of fans. But like I said, these tracks – they have the space for everybody to keep a safe distance. You can wear mask, and of course the drivers are in a car by themselves. you know, that's just me. I would figure it out.
I'm trying to think through the logistics quickly, guys. I'm troubleshooting here. I'm tossing it to you guys who probably are familiar with it more. I think some of the things I think about would be, would you run, you know, races on the same track so that you limit the travel and everybody having a, you know,
great
take their
point.
Entire operation going. And then pit road, you know, some of the things that do bring people closer together, would you try to take some extra measures there? But, I mean, it's interesting. I'm sure that they're doing this, right?
Well,
I'm sure every organization is doing this in their own way.
Why not have –
trying to figure out how to do it.
That's a good point. Why not have all the tracks left on the schedule that have two dates? Start with two-date tracks.
They would absolutely do that.
Right? And you just run the run 2 weeks in a row from the same track and just stay there.
And so really what would happen in that is you would have – so Atlanta and Homestead only have the one date. So you could make those up whenever. But think about this concept for a second. Let's say Bristol, you know, you have two dates there. You could hypothetically, and this has been thrown around, you could run like Atlanta on a Wednesday night, and then go to Bristol because they're not that far apart. And then go to Bristol and run the weekend. And you could, not, if you wanted to knock out both dates, you could. Now you have to factor in, are you running the Xfinity races? Are you running the truck races? Are you continuing their seasons as well? So those are some logistics. But they've looked at midweek races to try and knock some of this stuff out that are, you know, with dates that are close together. You know, Talladega and Atlanta, they're not far apart. So do you run Atlanta, you know, middle of the week, Talladega on the weekend? Those are some things to consider as well.
Good stuff. All right, we'll come back. Chris Mason to begin the fourth and final hour of Wednesday's show. That's next.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.